So the question here, which is the broad question that I'm sort of thinking about is, you know, well, let's just remind ourselves why study moduli problems? So, I mean, if you're sort of, if you're in algebraic geometry, which is,
my apologies.
Oh, okay.
Seminar.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. All right. Okay, so algebraic geometers are sort of obsessed with moduli problems. And when I reflect on why this is, I can think of sort of two general reasons why, you know, why think about moduli problems. So the first is this idea that, so okay, by a moduli problem, I just mean a classification problem of algebra geometric objects. So the first reason is somehow this idea that classification leads to a sort of deeper structural a deeper understanding of the actual objects in question, so of geometric objects. So a very, you know, classical and example of this is if you start by wanting to classify Lie groups. So if I just want to understand Lie groups up to isomorphism, this leads to the theory of root data. And sort of the theory of root data is much more than just the classification problem that you originally started with. It tells you about their representation theory and all sorts of interesting combinatorial stuff all blossoms out of this, the pursuit of this classification problem. So that's sort of the first reason. And then the second reason that algebraic geometers are obsessed with moduli problems, I would sort of pinpoint this in the 80s. So there's a sort of explosion of mathematical physics. In the 80s, although probably the roots of this in math and physics go back much farther on both sides, but here the idea is the following. So let's say you're not actually just intrinsically interested in the classification problem, but the idea is you can construct construct new invariants of a manifold X by assigning X mapped to some moduli problem. And then the invariant is equal to just sort of, you know, a count of objects up to isomorphism in that moduli problem. This is a very sort of, you know, cartoon sketch, but this idea is that, so examples here are, in this sort of mathematical language, where it would be like things like pseudo-holomorphic curves, or gauge theory, you know, Donaldson theory in mathematics, Seiberg-Witten theory, et cetera. And here you're not necessarily interested in classifying, you're not interested as a pure classification problem in the solutions of the Yang-Mills equations or something like that, but you are interested in sort of using these moduli spaces as some auxiliary construction of an invariant for the manifold itself. And so what I'm going to talk about today is a new way of, or not really new, but sort of a development in the way of thinking about moduli problems in algebraic geometry, which kind of addresses both of these motivations for thinking about moduli problems. So I'm going to sort of keep those in mind over the course of the talk. So, okay, so as you all know, the thing that makes moduli problems sort of subtle in algebraic geometry, sort of subtle and interesting, much more subtle than this sort of Lie groups question, where the is that the classification of algebra geometric objects often is not discrete. So there's some need for, there's continuous parameters involved in specifying, for instance, an algebraic curve, a Riemann surface. And so there's immediately, as you enter the theory, a need to construct moduli spaces. So so the first issue one encounters is the construction of moduli spaces. So, algebraic geometers have a very mature language to talk about this using the language of algebraic stacks. So you can often, so in algebraic geometry, you specify the moduli problem. By defining algebraic families of objects. So, and you're looking for, so for the moduli of curves, let's say MG, the moduli of genus G curves of B. By this notation, what I mean is a family of smooth curves of genus G bearing over some, this is some algebraic variety. Yeah, and so moduli problems in algebraic geometry tend to be very easy to specify. So this is an example. What do I mean by this? Well, what I mean by this is the sort of the category of schemes C mapping to B, where fibers are smooth Riemann surfaces. So this is a map of algebraic varieties. These fibers are smooth Riemann surfaces, and if you want to get sort of precise about this, you could say that this is the thing I'm trying to classify as this set of such things up to isomorphism. And if you want to be a little bit more precise, you'd say I want to classify this category of schemes over the base like this, keeping track of the isomorphisms that these objects can have between each other. So this is what's called a groupoid. So the question here, so the ideal solution. Once you realize that, for instance, in this example, Riemann surfaces don't admit a discrete classification, then the best you can hope for is a space a space I'll call this sort of M like this, such that this moduli functor is just equal to the maps from this variety B to the space M. So it's a really very crisp, clean language for thinking about moduli problems. Unfortunately, this doesn't happen. Even in this example, this sort of basic, this is the oldest, I think this is actually where the problem, the name moduli comes from, is Riemann's study of this sort of, of the complex structures on a smooth genus G surface. Even in this example, this ideal is not achieved. And you can construct some moduli space. So there is a moduli space which parameterizes. So there is a space which parameterizes genus G. Riemann surfaces up to isomorphism, but it doesn't actually parameterize families in this sense. So in other words, on this moduli space, it's a nice quasi-projective variety, but on the moduli space, there's no sort of universal curve such that you know, a map from B to that moduli space, you can just pull back the universal curve and get a family of curves. So that it's not quite realized even in this example. So but what is achieved, as I said, but this still has a coarse moduli space. So what this really is a map of algebraic stacks. So given a family of genus G Riemann surfaces over a base B, I can induce a map from B to this space M. But this is not actually sort of an equivalence. But it is actually a bijection on geometric points. So it's a bijection, but it's not really an equivalence of functors. So this seems bad, but there's actually, at this point, a very sort of mature theory that's for handling this that's almost like a complete package, almost. So there's this theorem. Kiyomori. Which says that, this Kiyomori theorem, which says that if you have a functor, given a moduli problem, yeah. So there are some sort of technical hypotheses that you need. You want it to be separated, and you probably want it to have what's called finite inertia. But basically, roughly, given a moduli problem where objects. Given a separated moduli problem, which is, I'll say, Hausdorff. So families of objects in this moduli problem have unique limits, which is Hausdorff bounded. And where objects have finite automorphism groups. So if you have these three hypotheses, then there's a coarse moduli space. So by this sort of scriptium, I mean the moduli problem that you're actually interested in classifying. And by this square M, I mean some honest variety. And so this coarse moduli space is a technical term, but I don't really want to define it for you. Basically, it just means some space with a map like this. And the important thing about it is that the points of this space, actual geometric points of this space, classify isomorphism classes of objects here. So it's a really sort of a bijection on objects, and it's almost the space that solves the moduli problem. And so this is actually sort of, in some sense, this is maybe the best you can hope for. But it's nice. I mean, there are lots of reasons why you'd want to be able to construct moduli spaces. For instance, you know, then questions like how many curves are there that satisfy this, that, and the other property in P2 can actually be described as some intersection theory on the moduli space of curves which exist in P2 and things like that. So it's sort of a very useful thing. Or similarly, if you want to construct sort of Donaldson invariants or something like that, then you want to study a moduli space of vector bundles over some algebraic variety, and you want to be able to integrate over that moduli space. And so in order to be able to perform integrations, you know, do geometric acts, you need a moduli space. So this theorem suggests a general approach. So it suggests a general approach to moduli problems. So first would be just write down some moduli problem. So define a family. Define what you mean by families of objects. So in this case, families occur. So I'm going to do another example in a second. So that's step one, and this is usually very easy. Step two would be to sort of show that this is an algebraic stack. That's a... So this is another technical term that, you know, so certain functors of points here, certain notions of what I mean by a family are well behaved. They're in the sense that they're what's called an algebraic stack. This a priori is kind of seems like a hard thing to show, but there is actually some incredibly general and useful technology. So for instance, there's Arden's criteria. So there are some, so this step two is, you know, hard in principle, but actually it's somewhat well understood. So to show that your moduli functor is actually well behaved in some sense, being an algebraic stack, it basically just means that your moduli problem is like a quotient of a scheme by the action of some groupoid, if that terminology is familiar to you. So one is usually immediate. Two is also usually under control. And then step three in this program would be to check the hypotheses of this Kiyomori theorem. Check that it's Hausdorff, or separated in the sort of algebraic geometry language. Check that it's Hausdorff, bounded, and finite automorphisms. Okay, and that will imply by the Kiyomori theorem that existence of moduli space, of a moduli space. Or coarse moduli space. Okay, so this is the program, end of talk. No, I'm just kidding, it's not the end of the talk. The reason is because this number three is actually tricky, or actually more precisely, number three doesn't hold in many interesting examples. So the problem, and it arises in many ways. So in the context of sort of question A, of problem A here, if you just have some geometric object and you're interested in classifying it, many of the natural moduli functors, I'll give you an example in a second, don't satisfy really any of these properties. They're not Hausdorff, so sequences of objects don't have unique limits. They are not bounded, so there's just sort of way too many objects to classify with a single space, and objects don't have finite automorphism. So if you're just interested in purely a classification question, already this theorem is not really good enough for you. And also, there's another, from the perspective of B, I mean, basically the same thing holds. Like, even if you're just interested in constructing some moduli space so that you can integrate over it and define invariants of X, it just turns out that many of the moduli spaces that you want to write down and assign are not, don't have these properties, and so you need new technology. So the problem is that three fails in many contexts. Relevant to both A and B. Okay? Yeah, so the thing I'm going to tell you about, the development in this story, I have this step one, two, three here for analyzing a moduli problem. Today, it's a sort of variation on this approach. Which works for arbitrary I put arbitrary in quotes because, of course, there's always, you know, yeah. What, yeah. There's always a bigger fish or whatever. But basically, in the examples where in examples where that are not where the moduli problem is not Hausdorff bounded or and does not have finite automorphism groups, this approach will work. Let me see what's okay. So, yeah, I guess I'll just state the theorem with lots of technical scare quotes in those, just technical words, but just to give you a flavor. So the theorem, which is due to myself and Alper, oh sorry, the orders. So the theorem is basically that if X is a bounded algebraic stack such that, so algebraic stack, I guess so there's another technical term here I need to say, with affine diagonal. In other words, if the automorphism groups of objects are algebraic groups, or affine algebraic groups, then if X is a bounded algebraic stack with this property, then and one X is theta reductive. Some of these are new concepts. So I'll put them in with scare quotes. 2x is theta reductive. 1x has what's called unpunctured inertia. And 3 is that closed points have reductive stabilizer groups. Then there exists a good moduli space. And that what that is a map from the moduli problem X to some scheme X which has some nice properties. So So this is the main technical result. I'm not going to have time to sort of explain what all of these hypotheses really mean, but if you're sort of interested, you're welcome to ask me later. But basically, these properties 1, 2, and 3 can be verified in many more examples. And so this leads to the construction of many new examples of what are called good moduli spaces. So this I will define for you. This is a technical term, and it's a replacement for the notion of a coarse moduli space for stacks which have sort of positive dimensional stabilizer groups. If stacks where objects, moduli problems where objects don't have finite automorphisms, you can still ask for this for the existence of a good moduli space. And for many purposes, having a good moduli space is really great because, let's say you have some moduli problem. If it has a compact good moduli space, then you can sort of, for instance, integrate K-theory classes. That implies that the K-theoretic integral of K-theory classes on the stack X are well defined. And so that's sort of the starting point for defining things like Donaldson invariance and so forth is having the existence of these good moduli spaces. Okay. So this is the idea. so okay. So let me back up. So that's sort of the main theorem. Let me back up and give you discuss an example. So this is really sort of the gold standard. Moduli problem, where this sort of Kiyomori idea breaks in many ways, in every way, in every possible way. Okay, so the gold standard moduli problem is I'll call the moduli problem of holomorphic vector bundles on a Riemann surface. So bun RD, so I'm going to say fix a Riemann surface sigma, and I'm going to say bun RD. Well, this is the moduli problem. So if I put some variety here, what do I mean by family? So this is supposed to be the moduli of holomorphic vector bundles. Well, of rank R and degree D. So what is this bun RD? Well, a family is just simply a vector bundle. So what I mean by a family of vector bundles on sigma over some base B is a vector bundle on sigma times the base B, whose fibers have rank R and degree D. In other words, if I restrict to a point in B times the Riemann surface, I get something of the correct topological type. So you can, this is, in terms of this Kiyomori sequence here, okay, that's a well-defined, these things, along with the notion of isomorphism, this is what I mean by families. It's actually not too hard. There are several different ways to show that this is an algebraic stack. So let's think up here. So the issues, yeah. So the issues is this is not Hausdorff. So these are almost sort of exercises for people who haven't thought about this before. But you can, what I can do is I can find many, many. Take like let's say degree is 0 and the rank is 2. Then there are many, many ways to take the trivial bundle on sigma and degenerate it to a sum of, O1 or On direct sum O minus N. So there are many, many limits. So I can find families of bundles where every fiber is trivial, but a central fiber has many different isomorphism types. So this is definitely not a Hausdorff moduli problem. Let's see, it's not bounded. So this is another sort of exercise in algebraic geometry, but again, if I say degree 0 rank 2 bundles, I can look at the cohomology and the dimension of the cohomology groups of that vector bundle. Well, the sheaf cohomology will get higher and higher. I can find examples that are higher and higher and higher. They're all in the same connected component of the stack, but there's no way to parameterize all of these different bundles with a single quasi-projective variety. It's just because of basically semi-continuity of dimension of cohomology. There's just no way. So this moduli problem is just too big. And then also, positive dimensional stabilizers. Okay. So the solution here is very classical, and it's to introduce this notion of semi-stability. So these are the issues. So what do you do? So you introduce, okay, so this is the problem. The solution is the following. The solution of this problem, that it doesn't have any of the nice properties that you want your moduli to have, is the following theorem. And this is a sort of Hardenauer-Simon theorem. So basically, it says that any vector bundle E has a unique, and this uniqueness thing is kind of incredible. And I'll say sort of E naught equals, so E is equal to E naught, and it's contained but not equal to E1, it's contained but not equal to dot, 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 all the way down to EP, which is equal to zero. That's what I mean by a filtration. So any vector bundle has a unique filtration such that, with the following properties, such that one, so if I have a filtration of vector bundles like this, I can say, you know, at each stage in the filtration, I can say, look at the rank and the degree of every bundle. And when I plot, so if I plot rank down here and degree over here, then my original bundle E corresponds to some point like this of a certain rank and degree. That's sort of fixed by the R and D here. And then I can plot and it should look like this. In other words, it should be convex. So convex path in the rank degree in the rank degree plane. So this and this this would be sort of this is E naught, E1, E2, E3 is just a zero vector bundle. If I stipulate that the filtration cuts out a convex path in the rank degree plane, and then I also stipulate that the associated gradient, the associated gradient, so if I take the bundle EI and quotient out by EI plus one is semi-stable, there's no subbundle of this thing where the slope is even higher than the given slope. So in other words, if I can find a subbundle of this quotient E1 mod E2, which has slope bigger than the slope of this line, then I could actually find like a sort of more convex, it's not clear that that's convex, but I could find sort of a more convex way and find an intermediate refine this filtration, right? So it's semi-stable, the quotients are semi-stable if that's impossible to do. So that's the theorem. Did I say, oh yeah, there's a unique filtration such that one and two, that's end of theorem. And so this is kind of remarkable. Yeah, so EI mod EJ is semi-stable, meaning no subbundle. So this is sort of remarkable because there are actual algebraic varieties parameterizing filtrations of a certain shape, this rank degree weighted sequence. Like, so if you're over C, there are sort of uncountably many possible filtrations. And what this is saying is that if I consider the variety that of bundles of this particular shape, this sort of maximal shape, then it consists of a single point. So it's like it's a very strong uniqueness statement, which is sort of surprising. And the way I think about this is this is a classification. So when you say, you might be interested as a geometer in classifying vector bundles on your Riemann surface up to isomorphism. And so there's one other thing I wanted to say. So there's a sort of amendment to this theorem. And I'll sort of attribute this to maybe Schatz and Mumford. It's sort of a refinement here. So there's a stratification. There's a stratification, von RD, is equal to von RD semi-stable. That's an open an open substack, a sort of open submoduli problem, which is to say it's the same moduli problem, except I'm only parameterizing bundles where every bundle is a semi-stable bundle, as I've defined here. A semi-stable bundle of rank R and degree D. Union over all alpha, I'll tell you what alpha is in a second, S alpha. So here, alpha is equal to sort of the ranks and degrees. Alpha is encoding the shape. Let me just say, this here is alpha, this polytope. It's encoding the shape of this polytope. Or another way to say it is a rank, is the ranks and degrees of these sub-bundles, R1, D1, dot, 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 RP, DP. So alpha is a tuple like this encoding the ranks and degrees. And so what is this S alpha? S alpha is the moduli of bundles of unstable bundles of whose, this is what's called the Hardenara-Simhan filtration. So whose HN filtration has shape alpha. Oh, and furthermore, sorry, continuing the theorem. Furthermore, the moduli problem of semi-stable bundles, so if I take bun RD semi-stable, has a good moduli space. So.
Is this how is alpha is a vector bundle over product of semi-stable?
So what one?
So is alpha is it?
Yeah, it's not actually. Exactly, right, yeah. So yeah, it's not actually a vector bundle, but it's sort of a, yeah, it's roughly like a vector bundle. I mean, the fibers are sort of linear things, mod unipotent groups, that sort of thing. So in other words, yeah, so right, that's exactly right. So the S alpha sort of project here, S alpha are algebraic stacks. They don't have moduli spaces, but they project, S alpha projects onto the product of bun, you know, R1, D1, semi-stable, times da da da, times bun, RP, DP, semi-stable. This is essentially, this is taking the associated gradient, taking the associated gradient of the filtration, and the fibers of this map are simple to describe. It's roughly linear algebraic data. So once you say what the associated gradient is, you want to understand extensions, and then there's some, there, you can have some unipotent automorphisms, I guess, just from the, you know, yeah, the extensions can have, I guess, more automorphisms than this thing. But yeah, but essentially it's sort of linear fibers. So if you're interested as an algebraic geometer in just the pure classification problem of vector bundles on this Riemann surface, I would argue that this is a complete classification. So you can't get a good moduli space, it's just too big, has all these pathologies, but if there's a sort of dense open submoduli problem, which is the semi-stable locus, and this is the one that corresponds to sort of the moduli of solutions of the Yang-Mills equations on the Riemann surface. So this is the one that differential geometers usually see, and is quite typical to ignore these other strata S alpha. But if you were interested from the perspective of classification, you would need this S alpha. And it's saying that the rest of the moduli problem is sort of stratified in a very controlled way by moduli problems which aren't too far from some other moduli problem that has a moduli space. And so this is a picture, you know, this is a very beautiful picture. For instance, kind of Etienne Bott made this famous when they used this stratification to sort of compute the ranks of the cohomology of these moduli spaces that you end up with. So there's I would argue that that in general you should not discard these strata. These strata are sort of important from the perspective of the classification problem, the pure classification of vector bundles on a curve, but also from the perspective of, well, I'll show you, I'll give you a better example. So a more interesting example.
Extra information, how these strata are attached.
They're locally closed subvarieties. There's an ordering. You can order alpha by, alpha refers to the shape of this polytope, and you can order that by inclusion. And all you know is that sort of the closure of S alpha lies in the polytopes which are bigger. It lies in the union of the S alpha, alpha prime, where alpha prime is sort of bigger in this ordering. You might be able to say, like if you're sort of a very committed algebraic geometer, you might be able to make even more precise statements about how the closures, that's like becomes its own sort of idiosyncratic problem. But like the general answer is that the closure of a strata lies in sort of strata of higher energy. Okay, so this is basically the program that, this is the theory of theta stability is basically trying to imitate this program. So the theory of theta stability theta stability is a sort of new theory which is designed to sort of imitate this approach for sort of more general moduli problems. So sort of an example which is kind of, sort of mystifying and very alluring would be, let's just say I have, I want to consider maps from nodal curves to the quotient stack V mod G. And this would be something like trying to define the Gromov-Witten invariance for some gauge theory with matter. This is some huge, again, a very wild moduli problem, and it's known that there are many notions of stability that sort of ad hoc notions of stability that have been cooked up on this moduli problem. For instance, you can say, okay, well, I consider some GIT quotient of this V by the vector space, and there's some notion that if I consider the Kontsevich moduli space of nodal curves mapping to the GIT quotient, that is in fact some open substack of this crazy giant moduli problem of all nodal curves along with a sort of G bundle and then a map of the associated vector bundle. Yeah, so somewhere in this giant moduli stack sits the notion of Kontsevich stable maps, but also there are more recent theories, like the sort of quasi-map theories, which have proven to be somewhat easier to compute than the Gromov-Witten invariance of the GIT quotients, and you might be interested in understanding the way these notions of stability all fit together. Now, this is a very different moduli problem than this, in the sense that I'm saying, okay, well, I'd like to imitate this approach. The very first question you encounter is, okay, so I have these, I know kind of what the semi-stable loci are, but what does it mean? What are these other strata? What could they possibly be? So the first thing you encounter if I'm trying to, sort of understand these non-linear moduli problems is what is a filtration? Yeah? So what could I possibly mean? What could these strata be classifying if not filtrations, which is something that really just exists in an abelian category? Well, the answer, and I don't have time to do this sort of exercise, but it's a beautiful construction. So the Ries, there's a sort of what's called a Ries construction. Which identifies filtered vector bundles. So I should say Z weighted. So in other words, instead of labeled by 0 through P, I should label these, I should have, by Z weighted filtration, I mean, EI inside EI plus 1 inside da 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 da, you know, etc. So going infinitely in both directions, and this thing will jump at only finitely many places. So it's equivalent to sort of giving a finite filtration along with some integer weights in a certain order. But anyway, so z-weighted filtered vector bundles. There's an equivalence between z-weighted filter vector bundles and equivariant, c star equivariant bundles on the sort of surface c times the Riemann surface sigma. And this right-hand side is something that you can actually encode for general moduli problems. For any moduli problem that I write down, I know what a family means, and it's sort of a purely formal exercise to say what you mean by a C star equivariant family. So this is this generalizes. So a filtration, a filtered object, I should just define this to be equal to, and by filtered again I mean a z-weighted filtered object, is equal to a map from c mod c star, this quotient stack c mod c star, to the moduli problem x. And so, you know, of course I'm not going to go into all the details or any of the details. I'll just say that this sort of naive observation leads to an entire theory of semi-stability and stratifications of this kind, which is actually sort of coming into maturity now. And there are certain, you know, properties about that you can specify for a moduli problem, which guarantees the sort of existence and uniqueness of these sorts of Hardy-Narasimhan stratifications of more general moduli problems. So, in the sort of, you know. So the applications of that, I think, are sort of forthcoming. For instance, for this analyzing this question about, you know, comparing different notions of stability for moduli of nodal curves to a quotient stack, that's sort of, you know, that would be sort of one of the dream applications. But already there are sort of more concrete applications, which I'll sort of give you a flavor for. So application. So I said there's this problem A and the problem B, and that this stratification is a stratification of this kind is sort of a solution to the problem A. Classify these geometric objects. So I'd like to show you an application to this problem B. So an application is to consider bridge and stability conditions on a surface. On DB of S, and let's just say S is a K3 surface. So this is even though we're back in the linear case, and I've advertised this as like some sort of broad, but this already has sort of interesting examples. So when you apply this sort of notion of stability and the sort of generalization of theta stability to this example, so here you can examples actually include like sort of Giesecke semi-stable coherent sheaves on the surface, but this is a sort of slight generalization. So basically you specify some abelian category living inside the derived category of the surface, but if you're sort of not into that sort of thing, you can just say coherent sheaves. And there's a notion of stability and Hardy-Narasimhan theory for objects in this abelian category. And so the example where this kind of comes up. What is the structure? So the set of stability conditions forms a manifold. So what I should do is I should fix a numerical K-theory class. And I want to classify objects, complexes, corresponding to a particular topological K-theory class. So fix a class new in the numerical K-theory of the surface, S. And I want to consider the moduli functor, MV, which is the moduli of families of objects, let me call this XV. So XV, this moduli functor, is families of objects of class whose K-theory class is nu. And the reason why this is a more interesting example than the case of vector bundles on a curve is because actually now there are many stability conditions. And the set of stability conditions forms a manifold. So this notation, this idea is due to Bridgeland and Douglas. So stab is actually a manifold. So this stability condition, the notion of a Bridgeland stability condition, every stability condition gives you an open moduli sub-moduli problem, X semi-stable of V, and this is the moduli of semi-stable objects of class V. So let me call my sigma will be a Bridgeland stability condition on the surface, and I can consider for any sigma the moduli of sigma semi-stable objects of class V. Okay? Sorry to sort of introduce a bit of notation. So the phenomenon here, what happens is that for generic sigma, this will actually be, we're on a K3 surface, so for generic sigma and what's called for the experts, I'll call this a primitive K-theory class, but for generic sigma, this will actually have roughly speaking, a coarse moduli space. So if I consider semi-stable objects of a particular numerical K-theory class, this will have a coarse moduli space. Will actually be a manifold. But for non-generic sigma, for sigma on some real codimension one walls, in this manifold of stability conditions, this thing will not be a manifold. So, if I say X sigma semi-stable, will be an algebraic stack with all of the pathologies that we've discussed. With some of these pathologies. Previously, you know, it's sort of known that for these generic sigma that these things are actually sort of described by these sort of compact hyperkähler manifolds give you coarse moduli spaces, but it actually wasn't known if these non-generic sigma actually have good moduli spaces. And that's a corollary of this theorem with Alper and Heinloth. So it's a corollary of this recent theorem. And this sort of framework of theta stability. So a corollary is that this X sigma semi-stable of class V has a good moduli space. For all sigma, so even on the wall, and this leads to a picture which has applications. Namely, it leads to sort of wall crossing formulas. So when you apply the theory of theta stability, what you can do is you have the following. So this is the picture that you get. So I have X. Let's say sigma naught is a non-generic. This is sort of non-generic. And this is a non-generic stability condition, so it's lying on one of these real codimension one walls. And the idea is if I perturb it a little bit in the space of stability conditions, the notion of semi-stability with respect to one of these perturbed stability conditions gets smaller. So let's say I perturb in one direction, and I have inside of here an open substack, sigma plus semi-stable objects. And then in here I have an open substack of sigma minus semi-stable objects. So when I perturb this notion of stability, I get two open substacks of this thing. And in fact, thanks to this corollary, this picture, which is happening on the level of stacks, also has a familiar picture on the level of moduli spaces. So this thing has a moduli space, which I'm going to call M. So this is M sigma naught semi-stable. This thing has a moduli space, which is M sigma plus semi-stable. And this thing has a moduli space, which is M sigma minus semi-stable. And this inclusion as open substacks actually corresponds to these things, which are no longer inclusions. They're sort of birational maps. They're contractions. And this is actually sort of a picture that birational geometers are very familiar with. It's an example of a flop. So this particular, in this case, understanding the birational geometry of these moduli spaces, it's nice to have a purely modular description of what's going on for the birational geometry of these moduli spaces. And the application here is that, let's say I have a K-theory class, and I want to know how its integral on this thing compares to the integral on that thing. Well, these differ by integrating over, you know, you can express the difference of the, you can say, compare the integral of a K-theory class here to the integral of a K-theory class here and the integral of a K-theory class here. So the integral of a K-theory class here will differ from the integral of that restriction of this K-theory class to this thing by some contribution coming from the strata. Well, what strata? It's the stratification of this of the hard of a Hardin-Riesenhahn kind that you get, you know, basically from applying the theory of theta stability to this stack here. And so you can very precisely come up with formulas that say what's the difference between integral of certain K-theory classes or certain Donaldson invariants defined for these non-generic sigma, and it gives you a formula for, you know, you can use this to derive a formula for how to compare the Donaldson invariance between these two generic sigmas. And so anyway, that's like a flavor of the, that's, I'll stop there. That's like a sort of a flavor of the results and the kind of applications. This picture here is something that I would say is a sort of general picture that you should see whenever you're setting birational changes in moduli problems. Anytime you're looking at a birational transformation of moduli spaces, you might expect that there's some slightly larger moduli problem and that birational transformation is actually implemented by a variation of stability in that more general moduli problem. So anyway, I think this is an instructive example. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Any questions? Can I get this kind of standard wall crossing formulas in this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yeah. This, like, Mochizuki has this big book on, you know, wall crossing formulas for algebraic Donaldson invariants. And I think you can recover, you know, those things from this perspective. But I haven't actually.
What about Donaldson-Thomason invariants?
Well, so I, yeah. No, Donaldson-Thomason invariants are harder. It has to do with, it's the fact that these stacks are zero shifted symplectic that leads to a very nice wall crossing formulas for integrals of K-theory classes. But when you go to a threefold, there's a similar geometry going. The geometry is similar, but you just don't get as nice comparison for integrals of K-theory classes. But there's already a very developed wall crossing theory for you know, in the case of threefolds. This is really more suited for surfaces. I mean, the geometry is the same, but how you extract enumerative information from it is different, is all I'm saying.
So here, can I get some kind of universal, kind of the universal wall crossing formula for at least this kind of?
I don't know. I mean,
can you sort of convert it to a formula in this generality, or?
Well, I mean, yeah. If you have a quasi-smooth sort of derived stack with a good moduli space, you can perturb. You can find stability conditions on that stack coming from line bundles, and the general theorem is that. There's a comparison theorem between the integral of K-theory classes on that stack and the integral of K-theory classes on the various semi-stable loci. And so there is a sort of very general wall crossing formula. For instance, it would apply in the case of maps from nodal curves to Vmod G, because that's another quasi-smooth stack. So, you know, there is somehow a very general wall crossing formula, but it's sort of in a tangential, it's a different direction than the DT wall crossing formula.
Right, but all this, I've been saying that all this algebra, it's also wall crossing formulas you can get this way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I can't really claim that. I'm not really an expert in that, in the, you know, sort of, it's sort of a technical subject. But yeah, I've talked to some guys about it who are sort of interested in pursuing that, seeing if you can get, how much of that you can get. I guess there's some issues. Yeah. In the K3 case, for sure. Maybe in the case of other surfaces, you don't get quasi-smooth stacks. I have to think about it. Yeah.
There's a black surface.
You know, away from the Calabi, for surfaces which aren't sort of, which don't have trivial canonical bundle, I'd have to think a little bit more about if you get these sorts of wall crossing formulas. But it's definitely it's a sort of a way of thinking about them. And I think it's more general than the Mochizuki stuff. So this has a technical appeal, it has an appeal from a technical direction in the sense that sort of the traditional way to get wall crossing formulas for Donaldson invariants is to construct some master space, to construct some auxiliary moduli space with a C star action, and then to use localization formulas to say, okay, well, there's integral some cohomology class which vanishes for dimension reasons, and when I look at the contributions from all the fixed points, I get some identity between the invariants of the various fixed points. So that is hard to do because you have to construct this master space, and you have to like. But this is like very close to like, this is like the pure, this is a very pure way to think about what is a wall crossing formula. You're just like varying stability, and manifestly this K-theory class that you're integrating, you know, you can just say it's the difference between these two K-theory classes comes geometrically from the difference in these two moduli problems, which is just a union.
I'm kind of afraid that's, well, I mean on the boundary, you might get some kind of complicated structure on the boundary, and then I don't know how explicit that's going to be.
Oh, that stratification is quite explicit, yeah. It's the same, they're like, you know, it comes down to integrals over moduli spaces of smaller numerical K-theory classes. Anyway, well, I'll tell you, I mean, if you're interested, I can tell you more about it, but.
Is this also going to drive the congruences between the moduli?
Yeah, this is another application, yeah. This is something, that's sort of why I got into this project, is because I wanted, in this particular example for moduli of let's say sheaves on a K3 surface or bridged and semi-stable objects, I needed to make to prove that these two things are derived equivalent. I needed to make some claim about the sort of local structure of this flop. And once you know something has a good moduli space, there's a really sort of beautiful foundational result of Alper, Hall, and Reed, which says that it's all locally over this good moduli space, this thing looks like a quotient of an affine thing by a linearly reductive group. And so that's another application of having this moduli space, and it's a sort of key step in proving the derived equivalence thing. So that's why I wanted to prove this theorem, and that's what I did.
One question.
Thanks.